Chapter 6. Changes in Quidditch since the 14th century. Pitch. Zacharias Mumps describes the 14th century pitch as oval-shaped, 500 feet long and 180 feet wide, with a small central circle, approximately 2 feet in diameter, in the middle. Mumps tells us that the referee, or quid judge, as he or she was then known, carried the 4 balls into this central circle while the 14 players stood around him. The moment the balls were released, the quaffle was thrown by the referee. See quaffle below. The players raced into the air. The goalposts in Mumps's time were still large baskets on poles, as seen in Figure C. In 1620, Quintius Umfraville wrote a book called The Noble Sport of Warlocks, which included a diagram of the 17th century pitch. See Figure D. Here we see the addition of what we know as scoring areas. See rules below. The baskets on top of the goalposts were considerably smaller and higher than in Mumps's time. By 1883, baskets had ceased to be used for scoring, and were replaced with the goalposts we use today, an innovation reported in the Daily Prophet of the time. See below. The Quidditch pitch has not altered since that time. Bring back our baskets! That was the cry heard from Quidditch players across the nation last night, as it became clear that the Department of Magical Games and Sports had decided to burn the baskets used for centuries for goal scoring in Quidditch.
We're not burning them, don't exaggerate, said an irritable-looking departmental representative last night when asked to comment. Baskets, as you may have noticed, come in different sizes. We have found it impossible to standardize basket size so as to make goalposts throughout Britain equal. Surely you can see it's a matter of fairness. I mean, there's a team up near Barnton. They've got these minuscule little baskets attached to the opposing team's posts. You couldn't get a grape in them. And up their own end, they've got these great wicker caves swinging around. It's not on. We've settled on a fixed hoop size, and that's it. Everything nice and fair.
At this point, the departmental representative was forced to retreat under a hail of baskets thrown by the angry demonstrators assembled in the hall. Although the ensuing riot was later blamed on goblin agitators, there can be no doubt that Quidditch fans across Britain are tonight mourning the end of the game as we know it.
"'Twon't be the same without baskets,' said one apple-cheeked old wizard sadly. "'I remember when I were a lad. We used to set fire to them for a laugh during to match. You can't do that with goal hoops. Half the fun's gone.'
Daily Prophet, 12 February, 1883. Balls. The Quaffle. As we know from Gertie Kettle's diary, the quaffle was from earliest times made of leather. Alone of the 4 Quidditch balls, the quaffle was not originally enchanted, but merely a patched leather ball, often with a strap, see Figure E, as it had to be caught and thrown one-handed. Some old quaffles have finger holes. With the discovery of gripping charms in 1875, however, straps and finger holes have become unnecessary, as the chaser is able to keep a one-handed hold on the charmed leather without such aids. The modern quaffle is 12 inches in diameter, and seamless. It was first colored scarlet in the winter of 1711. After a game when heavy rain had made it indistinguishable from the muddy ground whenever it was dropped. Chasers were also becoming increasingly irritated by the necessity of diving continually towards the ground to retrieve the quaffle whenever they missed a catch, and so, shortly after the quaffle's change of color, the witch Daisy Pennifold had the idea of bewitching the quaffle so that if dropped, it would fall slowly earthwards as though sinking through water, meaning that chasers could grab it in mid-air. The Pennifold quaffle is still used today. The Bludgers. The first bludgers, or blooders, were, as we have seen, flying rocks, and in Mumps's time they had merely progressed to rocks carved into the shape of balls. These had one important disadvantage, however. They could be cracked by the magically reinforced beaters' bats of the 15th century, in which case all players would be pursued by flying gravel for the remainder of the game. It was probably for this reason that some Quidditch teams began experimenting with metal bludgers in the early 16th century. Agatha Chubb, expert in ancient wizarding artifacts, has identified no fewer than 12 lead bludgers dating from this period, discovered both in Irish peat bogs and English marshes. "They are undoubtedly bludgers rather than cannonballs," she writes. "The faint indentations of magically reinforced beaters' bats are visible, and one can see the distinctive hallmarks of manufacture by a wizard, as opposed to a muggle. The smoothness of line, the perfect symmetry. A final clue was the fact that each and every one of them whizzed around my study and attempted to knock me to the floor when released from its case." Lead was eventually discovered to be too soft for the purpose of bludger manufacture. Any indentation left on a bludger will affect its ability to fly straight. Nowadays, all bludgers are made of iron. They are 10 inches in diameter. Bludgers are bewitched to chase players indiscriminately. If left to their own devices, they will attack the player closest to them. Hence, the beater's task is to knock the bludgers as far away from their own team as possible. The Golden Snitch. The Golden Snitch is walnut-sized, as was the Golden Snidget. It is bewitched to evade capture as long as possible. There is a tale that a Golden Snitch evaded capture for 6 months on Bodmin Moor in 1884, both teams finally giving up in disgust at their seeker's poor performances. Cornish wizards familiar with the area insist to this day that the snitch is still living wild on the moor, though I have not been able to confirm this story. Players. The Keeper. The position of keeper has certainly existed since the 13th century. See Chapter 4. Though the role has changed since that time. According to Zacharias Mumps, the keeper should be first to reach the goal baskets, for it is his job to prevent the quaffle entering therein. The keeper should beware of straying too far towards the other end of the pitch, in case his baskets come under threat in his absence. However, a fast keeper may be able to score a goal and then return to his baskets in time to prevent the other team equalizing. It is a matter for the individual conscience of the keeper. It is clear from this that in Mumps' day, the keepers performed like chasers with extra responsibilities. They were allowed to move all over the pitch and to score goals. By the time Quintius Umfraville wrote The Noble Sport of Warlocks in 1620, however, the keeper's job had been simplified. The scoring areas had now been added to the pitch, and the keepers were advised to remain within them, guarding their goal baskets, though keepers may fly out of this area in an attempt to intimidate opposing chasers or head them off early. The Beaters. The duties of the beaters have changed little through the centuries, and it is likely that beaters have existed ever since the introduction of the bludgers. Their first duty is to guard their team members from the bludgers, which they do with the aid of bats, once clubs. See Goodwin Neen's letter in Chapter 3. Beaters have never been goal scorers, nor is there any indication that they have handled the quaffle. Beaters need a good deal of physical strength to repel the bludgers. This is, therefore, the position that, more than any other, has tended to be taken by wizards rather than witches. Beaters also need to have an excellent sense of balance, as it is sometimes necessary for them to take both hands from their brooms for a double-handed assault on a bludger. The Chasers. Chaser is the oldest position in Quidditch, for the game once consisted wholly of goal scoring. The chasers throw the quaffle to each other and score 10 points for every time they get it through one of the goal hoops. The only significant change in chasing came about in 1884, 1 year after the substitution of goal hoops for goal baskets. A new rule was introduced which stated that only the chaser carrying the quaffle could enter the scoring area. If more than one chaser entered, the goal would be disallowed. The rule was designed to outlaw stooging, see fouls below, a move by which two chasers would enter the scoring area and ram the keeper aside, leaving a goal hoop clear for the third chaser. Reaction to this new rule was reported in the Daily Prophet of the time. "Our chasers aren't cheating." That was the stunned reaction of Quidditch fans across Britain last night when the so-called stooging penalty was announced by the Department of Magical Games and Sports last night. "Instances of stooging have been on the increase," said a harassed-looking departmental representative last night. "We feel that this new rule will eliminate the severe keeper injuries we have been seeing only too often. From now on, one chaser will attempt to beat the keeper, as opposed to three chasers beating the keeper up. Everything will be much cleaner and fairer." At this point, the departmental representative was forced to retreat as the angry crowd started to bombard him with quaffles. Wizards from the Department of Magical Law Enforcement arrived to disperse the crowd, who were threatening to stooge the Minister of Magic himself. One freckle-faced 6-year-old left the hall in tears. "I loved stooging," he sobbed to the Daily Prophet. "Me and me dad like watching them keepers flatten. I don't want to go to Quidditch no more." Daily Prophet, 22 June, 1884. The Seeker. Usually the lightest and fastest flyers, seekers need both a sharp eye and the ability to fly one or no-handed. Given their immense importance in the overall outcome of the match, for the capture of the snitch so often snatches victory from the jaws of defeat, seekers are most likely to be fouled by members of the opposition. Indeed, while there is considerable glamour attached to the position of seeker, for they are traditionally the best flyers on the pitch, they are usually the players who receive the worst injuries. "Take out the seeker," is the first rule in Brutus Scrimgeour's The Beater's Bible. Rules. The following rules were set down by the Department of Magical Games and Sports upon its formation in 1750. 1. Though there is no limit imposed on the height to which a player may rise during the game, he or she must not stray over the boundary lines of the pitch. Should a player fly over the boundary, his or her team must surrender the quaffle to the opposing team. 2. The captain of a team may call for time out by signaling to the referee. This is the only time players' feet are allowed to touch the ground during a match. Time out may be extended to a 2-hour period if a game has lasted more than 12 hours. Failure to return to the pitch after 2 hours leads to the team's disqualification. 3. The referee may award penalties against a team. The chaser taking the penalty will fly from the central circle towards the scoring area. All players other than the opposing keeper must keep well back while the penalty is taken. 4. The quaffle may be taken from another player's grasp, but under no circumstances must one player seize hold of any part of another player's anatomy. 5. In the case of injury, no substitution of players will take place. The team will play on without the injured player. 6. Wands may be taken onto the pitch, but must under no circumstances whatsoever be used against opposing team members, any opposing team member's broom, the referee, any of the balls, or any member of the crowd. Footnote. The right to carry a wand at all times was established by the International Confederation of Wizards in 1692, when Muggle persecution was at its height and the wizards were planning their retreat into hiding. End of footnote. 7. A game of Quidditch ends only when the golden snitch has been caught, or by mutual consent of the two team captains. Fouls. Rules are, of course, made to be broken. Several hundred Quidditch fouls are listed in the Department of Magical Games and Sports records, and all of them are known to have occurred during the final of the first-ever World Cup in 1473. The full list of these fouls, however, has never been made available to the wizarding public. It is the department's view that witches and wizards who see the list might get ideas. I was fortunate enough to gain access to the documents relating to these fouls while researching this book, and can confirm that no public good can come of their publication. 90% of the fouls listed are in any case impossible as long as the ban on using wands against the opposing team is upheld. This ban was imposed in 1538. Of the remaining 10%, it is safe to say that most would not occur to even the dirtiest player. For example, setting fire to an opponent's broom tail, attacking an opponent's broom with a club, attacking an opponent with an axe. This is not to say that modern Quidditch players never break rules. 10 common fouls are listed below. The correct Quidditch term for each foul is given in the first column. Name, blagging, applies to all players. Description, seizing opponent's broom tail to slow or hinder. Name, blatching, applies to all players. Description, flying with intent to collide. Name, blurting, applies to all players. Description, locking broom handles with a view to steering opponent off course. Name, bumfing, applies to beaters only. Description, hitting bludger towards crowd, necessitating a halt of the game as officials rush to protect bystanders. Sometimes used by unscrupulous players to prevent an opposing chaser scoring. Name, cobbing, applies to all players. Description, excessive use of elbows towards opponents. Name, flacking, applies to keeper only. Description, sticking any portion of anatomy through goal hoop to punch quaffle out. The keeper is supposed to block the goal hoop from the front rather than the rear. Name, haversacking, applies to chasers only. Description, hand still on quaffle as it goes through goal hoop. Quaffle must be thrown. Name, quaffle pocking, applies to chasers only. Description, tampering with quaffle, e.g. puncturing it so that it falls more quickly or zigzags. Name, snitchnip, applies to all players but seeker. Description, any player other than Seeker touching or catching the golden snitch. Name, stooging, applies to chasers only. Description, more than one chaser entering the scoring area. Referees. Refereeing a Quidditch match was once a task for only the bravest witches and wizards. Zacharias Mumps tells us that a Norfolk referee called Cyprian Udall died during a friendly match between local wizards in 1357. The originator of the curse was never caught, but is believed to have been a member of the crowd. While there have been no proven referee slayings since, there have been several incidences of broom tampering over the centuries, the most dangerous being the transformation of the referee's broom into a portkey, so that he or she is whisked away from the match halfway through and turns up months later in the Sahara Desert. The Department of Magical Games and Sports has issued strict guidelines on the security measures relating to players' brooms, and these incidents are now, thankfully, extremely rare. The effective Quidditch referee needs to be more than an expert flyer. He or she has to watch the antics of 14 players at once, and the most common referee's injury is consequently neck strain. At professional matches, the referee is assisted by officials who stand around the boundaries of the pitch and ensure that neither players nor balls stray over the outer perimeter. In Britain, Quidditch referees are selected by the Department of Magical Games and Sports. They have to take rigorous flying tests and an exacting written examination on the rules of Quidditch, and prove, through a series of intensive trials, that they will not jinx or curse offensive players, even under severe pressure.